Well, our theme for 2024 has been possessing the land, and we have been going through the book of Joshua, and we are at the end of the book of Joshua. We've been hearing stories of courage and obedience, and in some cases of disobedience, as Joshua and the Israelites are moving into and possessing the land that God gave them. Now, the last time I preached on Joshua, we talked about some special cities that were interspersed throughout the tribes. Remember, cities of refuge for the Levites. And the cities of refuge were also Levitical cities, which tells us something important about God's priority for what his people should be doing, and that is making a place for justice. We're going to be wrapping up our time now today in Joshua, and today is a time of reflection and renewal. I call this message, What Story Will You Tell? There is one last story in the book of Joshua about the 2.5 tribes on the east side of the Jordan, and they made their own place of worship. And it nearly caused a civil war. But instead, it caused everyone to pause and to take inventory. Who are we? What is our purpose? Why do we do what we do? Well, as we're wrapping up the book of Joshua, you may have seen on your bulletin, it's this famous verse from Joshua. Joshua says, "As for me and my house, we will serve the Lord." Well, that's coming up in chapter 24. But you know, that made me think back to Bob Dylan. Remember Bob Dylan? Most of us are old enough to remember Bob Dylan, a singer-songwriter who influenced many prominent musicians back in the 60s and the 70s with his thought-provoking lyrics. Well, in 79, he put out a song called "Gotta Serve Somebody," which was the beginning of his foray into gospel music. You see, according to Wikipedia, Bob Dylan had an encounter with Jesus Christ. Dylan believed he had experienced a vision of Christ in his Tucson hotel room. This is what he's quoted as saying, "Jesus did appear to me as King of Kings and Lord of Lords," and he would later say, "There was a presence in the room that couldn't have been anybody but Jesus. Jesus put his hand on me. It was a physical thing. I felt it. I felt it all over me. My whole body began to tremble, and the glory of the Lord knocked me down and picked me up." Sounds kind of like your testimony, Carrie. So in this song, "Gotta Serve Somebody," Bob Dylan lists all the random choices that we make, but one choice defines them all. You gotta serve somebody. It may be the devil, or it may be the Lord, but you gotta serve somebody. Joshua comes to the same conclusion toward the end of his life. Remember Joshua? Joshua had an encounter with the commander of the army of the Lord. And Joshua also had to make a choice. God is not for you or against you. The question is, are you for or against him? Are you with him? Joshua's constant exhortation throughout the book is to be strong and courageous, but strength and courage come from being allied with God. And the reflection that we do at the end of Joshua is to look back and see how this story has unfolded. God has done his part, but have we done our part? God has kept his promise, but have we kept our promises to God? Are our hearts clear? Are our motives pure? Have we stayed true to our purpose? And as we follow Joshua's reflection, I'm going to invite us this morning to do a little bit of our own reflection. What story will you tell? So if you're following along in your outline, either in your bulletin or those of you online through e-bulletin, the first question is this: have you kept your promises? Have you kept your promises? So I'm thinking about the five stages of grief. You're familiar with this? Grief has five stages, supposedly. There's denial, anger, depression, acceptance, but right in the middle is this bargaining stage. This is the stage where people say things like, "God, I will do anything if you let my loved one live." Or, "God, I'll do anything if you just bring my loved one back to me." You know what bargaining is? Bargaining is wrestling with a lack of control. It's realizing that we don't have control over our circumstances, and it's trying to grasp at straws, trying to assert some control. Well, maybe if I promise to do something, things will change. Have you ever done the bargaining thing? I think we all do. But how many of those promises do we actually keep? You see, if bargaining, if all it is an attempt to assert some control, then what happens when we regain control? We go back on our bargains. We do exactly what we want to, of course, because it was all about control in the first place. You see, our promises to God, and this is where your worship this morning, Glenn, was absolutely beautiful, because you covered this theme through those songs. Our worship has to go beyond bargaining to complete surrender. This is not about what God can or should do for you. This is all about recognizing who God is and what He requires of each of us. Our promises are not just another way to manipulate God, but it is an appropriate response to what God has done for us. And here's the first fill in the blank. Remember what God said. Remember what God said. We see this theme throughout Joshua, in fact, throughout all of the books of Moses. But picking up in Joshua chapter 22, verse 1. At that time, Joshua summoned the Reubenites, the Gadites, and the half-tribe of Manasseh and said to them, "You have kept all that Moses, the servant of the Lord, commanded you, and you have obeyed my voice and all that I have commanded you. You have not forsaken your brothers these many days, down to this day, but have been careful to keep the charge of the Lord your God." So you may remember that these 2.5 tribes, they had their inheritance on the east side of the Jordan. And this passage here is actually a repetition of a similar passage at the opening of the book of Joshua. So he's kind of creating this bookends to the story. You have made these promises. You have kept these promises. He's highlighting the faithfulness of these tribes on the east side of the Jordan. They kept their promise to go into battle for the tribes on the west side, who were still had their inheritance to claim. And as the book of Joshua is being written, and it may have not actually been compiled as a book until later on in the exile, as they are looking back, it's going to serve as a reminder to Israel how they were once united around a common purpose. And the reminder points all the way back to Moses receiving the Ten Commandments and Israel making a covenant with God at Mount Sinai. Let me take you back to Deuteronomy chapter 10, verses 12 and 13. "And now, Israel, what does the Lord your God require of you? He requires only that you fear the Lord your God, that you live in a way that pleases Him, and love Him and serve Him with all your heart and soul. and you must always obey the Lord's commands and decrees that I am giving you today for your own good. And Israel promised to do that. And it seemed like they did that for a while, or at least some did. Have you ever noticed that in every generation there are at least a few who follow God faithfully? But what does the majority do? The majority of people, well, they do whatever they want, right? Isn't that the way it seems to always go? There's a few people who faithfully follow God, and the majority, well, they just do whatever they want, all the while pretending to be religious or non-religious but good people or whatever the current trend may be. Most people, well, they just want to look okay while doing whatever they want. That's bargaining. That's not obedience. And that brings up the next fill in the blank. Remember to continue in obedience. Continue in obedience. Let's pick up in verse 4 of chapter 22. And now the Lord your God has given rest to your brothers as he promised them. Therefore, turn and go to your tents in the land where your possession lies, which Moses, the servant of the Lord, gave you on the other side of the Jordan. Only be careful to observe the commandment and the law that Moses, the servant of the Lord, commanded you, to love the Lord your God, to walk in all his ways, to keep his commandments, and to cling to him and serve him with all your heart and with all your soul. That's the Deuteronomy passage that we read. So Joshua blessed them and sent them away, and they went to their tents. Remember, you've heard me say this often, that repetition in the Bible is emphasis. What kinds of words have you heard repeated in Joshua? Be strong and courageous. Gets repeated often. That's right. What other blessings? What? Don't be afraid. That gets repeated, right? This word command, three times in that last passage, he's always talking about, remember what I've commanded you. Remember what I've commanded you. The words remember, promise, command, those get repeated often. Joshua, in this passage, he seems to be commending them, but you can also hear in this that he's kind of warning them too. You're doing good, but be careful. Be sure to keep it up. When is it that we usually make our biggest mistakes? When times are good or when times are bad? When times are good, you're right. Because what usually goes before failure? Let me take you to Proverbs 18:12. Before destruction, a man's heart is haughty, proud. But humility comes before honor. When times are going good, that's when we get into this mode where we're like, wow, I'm doing great. I'm pretty great stuff, right? Boom. That's when it happens. Huh? I like what Proverbs 16:18 says in a certain newer translation. Too much pride will destroy you. There you go. But there's a good kind of pride too, right? Everybody needs to hear well done once in a while. There's nothing wrong with that. But good pride keeps God in his rightful place, and that puts everything else in perspective. You see, my obedience is not really about me. My obedience is simply responding to and being empowered by God's grace and love. So how does that work? Is it me or is it not me? Well, the Apostle Paul says something very similar in 1 Corinthians 15:10. But whatever I am now, it is all because God poured out his special favor on me, and not without results, because I've worked harder than any of the other apostles. Yet not I, but it was God working through me by his grace. So what is it, Paul? Is it you? Is it not you? And Paul says, yeah, both. Right? I've worked hard at this, but it's not just me working. But it's God working through me. Do you see how that works? You see, we can be confident when our confidence is not really in ourselves, but in God. You see, I can do my part because God did his part. Yes, I do my part. I work hard at it, Paul says. But in the end, it's all God, right? When it's not really about you, but it's a gift from God, everything is a gift from God, well, then it frees you to be generous with God's gifts. And that's the next point. Remember to share what you have received. So let's read on. Now, to the 1.5 tribe of Manasseh, Moses had given a possession in Bashan, but to the other half, Joshua had given a possession beside their brothers in the land west of the Jordan. And when Joshua sent them back away to their homes and blessed them, he said to them, go back to your tents with much wealth and with very much livestock, with silver, gold, bronze, and iron, with much clothing, but divide the spoil of your enemy with your brothers. So this is focusing especially on this tribe of Manasseh, which had a unique situation because half of the tribe was on the east of the Jordan and half of the tribe was on the west of the Jordan. And when Joshua began the conquest of the land, remember, they with Jericho, they were not supposed to take any of the plunder. That may have been a test, because it seems like that was especially in the beginning. But there might have also been something about those cities. Perhaps things contained disease, or it's even been suggested that they were engaged in genetic experimentation, and that's why all of the livestock and things had to be destroyed. But there were some sizable, wealthy tribes in the north, such as Hazor, which in that case, Joshua did allow Israel to take the plunder. And part of the reason for that was that these tribes that were settling in the north, they could use that wealth to help establish them in their households, to help them to get a foothold in the land. After all, that's kind of how war works. You know, you conquer a land, you use those resources to establish your foothold there. But to the tribe of Manasseh, which is geographically divided, you see the purple section up there and then the light purple over on the west side of the Jordan, they're divided that way. Joshua tells them to be sure and share their wealth with their cousins on the other side of the river. Why? Because you can only do what you do because there are other people supporting you, backing you up, as it were. Those of you who have served in the military, maybe you were a soldier on the front line, or maybe you served somewhere else. But for every person who is on the battlefield, there are dozens of other enlisted persons who are doing what? Maintaining the supply line, analyzing information, facilitating communication, keeping your vehicles running, making sure that the soldier has the best possible chances to do his or her job well. And that's why everyone should share in the spoils. Moses commanded this already in the wilderness, Numbers 31:27. Then divide the plunder into two parts. Give half to the men who fought the battle and half to the rest of the people. And David had the same policy, 1 Samuel 30. David said, my friends, don't be so greedy with what the Lord has given us. The Lord protected us and gave us victory over the people who attacked. Who would pay attention to you anyway? Soldiers who stay behind to guard the camp get as much as those who go into battle. And David made this a law for Israel and it's been the same ever since. Whoever fights shares with those who are backing them up. But do you see how this attitude is behind this request for generosity? Do you know why you should be generous? Because it's not really about you anyway, right? Everything you have has been given to you by God, and God used other people to get you to where you are. And that's why you should share. Your generosity simply acknowledges that fact. Keeping your promises, because your promises are what binds you to God and to others. And our commitments to God and to one another are what weaves us together into something so much bigger than any of us. So here's the next question. Are your motives pure? Are your motives pure? The difference between bargaining and obedience is, well, it's most often invisible to anyone but ourselves. Nobody else knows why you do what you do. Nobody knows if you are doing it to please God or to appease God. Ooh, what does that mean? Well, there's a difference, and it's a big one, between those who are pleasing God and those who are appeasing God. The difference is huge. And that brings up another question. Is your altar an idol? Well, what's that about, you say? Well, let's read on in Joshua chapter 22. And when they came to the region of the Jordan that is in the land of Canaan, the people of Reuben, the people of Gad, and the half-tribe of Manasseh built there an altar by the Jordan, an altar of imposing size. And the people of Israel heard it and said, "Behold, the people of Reuben and the people of Gad and the half-tribe of Manasseh have built an altar on the frontier of the land of Canaan in the region about the Jordan, on the side that belongs to the people of Israel." And when the people of Israel heard of it, the whole assembly of people of Israel gathered at Shiloh to make war against them. So you get this. So the people on the east side build a huge altar, and the people on the west side, that's the predominant area, they heard about it and they said, "Hey, you can't do that." And they gathered at Shiloh, which is right by the river. They're amassing their encampment and they're getting ready to have a civil war over this. So, last time we talked about how there were priestly cities all over Israel. And there were cities of refuge, and they were appropriately spaced, three on the east side of the Jordan, three on the west side of the Jordan. And the idea is that anybody who needs a city of refuge should be able to reach one within a day or two. But there was only one tabernacle. And at this time, it was centrally located in Shiloh, which is where the flag is on the map there. And that was the only place where sacrifices for sin was to be offered, at the tabernacle at Shiloh. You know, there's a lot of things about our understanding of God and of religion that differ from place to place. We call that contextualization. You know, you go to a different city, a different country, and people are going to worship God a little bit differently, but there are some things that absolutely have to stay the same. For example, John 14:6, Jesus told them, "I am the way, the truth, and the life. No one can come to the Father except through me." Christians all over the world, we may worship God differently, but that truth will always be the same. That doesn't change. 2 Timothy 2:5. For there is one God and one mediator between God and mankind, the man Jesus Christ. He's the only way to God. That will not change. That needs to stay the same. Even today, as Christians, we may differ on a lot of things, but one, there is one way to God and one sacrifice, and that is Jesus. So when somebody builds an altar on the other side of the river, what's your first thought? How dare they do that? They're offering sacrifices over there. There's only one place to sacrifice for sin. What about when somebody opens up a church on the other side of town? What's your first thought? Why don't they come and worship here? We're a great church. Why don't they just come here? Huh? If they're just like us, is that an altar or is that an idol? I don't know. Kind of depends on why you're doing it. Here's the problem. We don't always know, do we? But be careful, because when you accuse someone else of building an idol instead of an altar, you may just be broadcasting to everyone that your altar is really an idol. Ooh, see how that works? Why? Because this is no longer about worshiping God. This is about me and what I want. Here's the next question. Is your sacrifice in rebellion? Is your sacrifice in rebellion? Picking up in verse 21, then the people of Reuben, the people of Gad, the half tribe of Manasseh said in answer to the heads of the family of Israel, the mighty one, the Lord, the mighty one, God the Lord, he knows, and let Israel itself know if it was in rebellion or in breach of faith against the Lord, then do not spare us today for building an altar to turn away from following the Lord. Or if we did so to offer burnt offerings or grain offerings or peace offerings on it, may the Lord himself take vengeance. No, we did it from fear that in time to come, your children might say to our children, what have you to do with the Lord, the God of Israel? For the Lord has made Jordan, the Jordan River, a boundary between us and you. You people of Reuben, people of Gad, you have no portion with the Lord. So your children might make our children cease to worship the Lord. I know, I see some of you going, huh? Well, that's kind of right, that's kind of not. Yeah, that's exactly right. So this is the reply of the Reubenites, the Gadites, and the half-tribe of Manasseh. They say, well, only God knows what is in our hearts. Let him judge. That's actually the right response. Point them right back up to God and say, this is not about us. This is about him. That's what worship is. That's worship, giving the glory back to God and doing what we do out of reverence and honor for him. That's appropriate. So based on that response, this is an altar, not an idol, at least not yet. But then they continue on a little bit. Yes, we're going to offer sacrifices, but we're not going to offer the sacrifices that you can only offer in the temple, the burnt offerings and the peace offerings. You know, they can still offer sacrifices of thanksgiving and praise. So on face value, there is no rebellion here, just wanting to honor God. But then let's look a little deeper. Why do you really want to do this? And their answer is, well, honestly, we're afraid. Afraid of what? Afraid of being left out? Afraid of being singled out? Afraid of being different? Afraid of rejection? You know, it's not evident yet, but there is a root of idolatry, at least potentially so, just below the surface. They're afraid, and it's not a godly fear. What they fear is not even real yet. They're afraid of what may happen. And isn't that where so many of our fears lie? They're afraid for future generations. But in fact, they are planting seeds of idolatry that future generations will follow those fears. I only know this because I read the rest of the Old Testament. So I have the benefit of seeing it in the whole context. But as for what's happening right now in the book of Joshua, everything looks okay. Right now, their argument is convincing enough for Joshua and for Phinehas the priest. And here's the next question. Is your worship a witness? Is your worship a witness? Then Phinehas, son of Eleazar, the priest, I'm in verse 32. Phinehas, the son of Eleazar, the priest, and the chiefs returned from the people of Reuben, the people of Gad, and the land of Gilead, to the land of Canaan, to the people of Israel, and brought back word to them. And the report was good in the eyes of the people of Israel. And the people of Israel blessed God and spoke no more of making war against them to destroy the land where the people of Reuben, the people of Gad, were settled. The people of Reuben, the people of Gad, called the altar witness, for they said, "It is a witness between us that the Lord is God." So here's the official report from the high priest. This is not a competing altar. This is a witness. What is a witness? A witness is something that stands for or points to something else. For example, we mostly use that term in a courtroom. A witness in a court represents that their testimony is the truth. They are a witness to what happened. Now, in the Old Testament, when this word witness is used, it's used, often used of an object, like a big stone or an altar that is built to represent a reminder of an agreement or an event, like Jacob building an altar to remind him of his encounter with God. That altar was called a witness. And there's going to be a stone set up a little bit later that is also a witness. But this altar that is on the east side of the Jordan is supposed to be like the one on the west side of the Jordan. Not an altar to a different god, but a replica of the one at Shiloh. Also happens to be much bigger, but forget about that. It is a witness, a reminder of the presence of God at Shiloh. And that seems good enough for now. But I said they were planting the seeds of later rebellion. Later, King Jeroboam is going to build altars in the north of Israel and in the south of Israel so that people don't have to travel so far. And those are not going to be altars like at Shiloh. Those are going to be idols like they had after Sinai. And that brings us to the third question. Is your purpose clear? Is your purpose clear? So why is all of this in the book of Joshua? Well, first of all, because Moses was a great record keeper, and that apparently didn't stop with Moses. Joshua apparently also kept very good records of everything that was happening. And then secondly, because the Jews, during their exile, are pouring over these ancient manuscripts and are compiling them into a book to make an orderly account of their story. And as they're reading these accounts of Joshua, they are inserting their own narration, and you can hear them asking the questions, what happened? How did we get here? what went wrong? We were once a united people who fought for one another. We were once a people who, even though divided, bore witness to the truth. The answer is they lost sight of their purpose. And that's why the stories of Joshua need to be told and retold. Because when it comes to courage, we don't just need courage, we need conviction. Courage comes from not just being powerful or mighty, but courage comes from having a purpose. And let's be clear about what that purpose is. So your next fill in the blank is simply this: hold your course. Hold your course. Joshua 23, verse 6. Therefore, be very strong to keep and to do all that is written in the book of the law of Moses, turning aside from it neither to the right hand nor to the left, that you may not mix with these nations remaining among you, or make mention of the names of their gods, or swear by them, or serve them, or bow down to them. But you shall cling to the Lord your God, just as you have done to this day. For the Lord has driven out before you great and strong nations, and as for you, no man has been able to stand before you to this day. One man of you puts to flight 1,000, since it is the Lord your God who fights for you, just as he promised you. But be careful, be very careful, therefore, to love the Lord your God. So hold your course. Don't turn to the right or to the left. What does that mean? Well, I think it means don't get distracted. A book that I read many years ago, I'm just trying to find the exact chapter, but I can't remember where I placed the book. And Neil Anderson's book, The Bondage Breaker. How many you read that or remember that? Great book on deliverance. He has this chapter in there, this illustration he calls the gauntlet. And the person who is seeking deliverance, it's like they're standing on the street. I always imagine it as being like an old Western town, but I guess it could be more like the Las Vegas Strip. Jesus is at the end of the street, and you are moving towards Jesus, but everything around you on either side of the street is trying to get your attention, is trying to distract you, is like, hey, turn in here, hey, come over here, hey, we got something that you want. Everything is trying to get your eyes off of Jesus. But the key is keeping your eyes fixed on Jesus and moving through the gauntlet of distraction, keeping your focus on Jesus. The point is that victory in the Christian life does not come from engaging every little thought or even every demon that tries to distract us. Victory comes from keeping our eyes on Jesus and constantly, consistently moving in his direction. Yes, there are going to be battles along the way, but don't lose sight of what you are fighting for. Don't let the worries of life or even the fear distract you from your purpose. It's all about him. Just like we sang this morning, it's all about you. I'm sorry for everything else that I've made it, but it's always been all about you. Loving him, following him, becoming more like him. That's our goal. That's what we're doing. And then also this, remember your history. Remember your history. And now we're in chapter 24. Joshua gathered all the tribes of Israel to Shechem and summoned the elders, the heads, the judges, and the officers of Israel. And they presented themselves before God. And Joshua said to all the people, "Thus says the Lord, the God of Israel, long ago your fathers lived beyond the Euphrates. Terah, the father of Abraham and of Nahor, they served other gods. And then I took your father Abraham from beyond the river and led him through all the land of Canaan and made his offspring many. I gave him Isaac. And it continues, but why is idolatry such a big deal? Why is God so concerned about them being distracted and turning to idols? Because that's where you came from. If you know your history, you know that is what I brought Abraham out of. Why would you want to go back there? God called Abraham out of a land where there were lots of gods and they were in rebellion. And God revealed himself to Abraham as Yahweh, not like any of the other gods. And God taught Abraham to live by faith, believing him, trusting for the impossible. And yes, Yahweh gave Abraham Isaac, father of many nations, gave him one son. Said, watch what I can do through Isaac. It's a reminder of their history that God gave them everything that they own now. And picking up again in verse 11, and you went over the Jordan and came to Jericho, and the leaders of Jericho fought against you, also the Amorites, the Perizzites, the Canaanites, the Hittites, the Girgashites, the Hivites, and the Jebusites, and I gave them into your hand. And I sent the hornet before you, which drove them out before you, two kings of the Amorites. It was not by your sword, not by your bow. I gave you the land in which you had not labored, and cities that you had not built, and you dwell in them. And you eat the fruit of vineyards and olive orchards that you did not plant. You know, pride comes from forgetting how we got to where we are and not giving God the credit for what he has done. That's why the Bible commands us so often to remember. Remember. Remember how you got to where you are. Remember what God did. Psalm 105 is a great psalm expressing this. Give thanks to the Lord. Call on his name. Proclaim his deeds among the peoples. Sing to him. Sing praise to him. Tell about all his wondrous works. Boast in his holy name. Let the hearts of those who seek the Lord rejoice. Seek the Lord and his strength. Seek his face always. Remember the wondrous works he has done, his wonders, and the judgments he has pronounced. You offspring of Abraham, his servant, Jacob's descendants, his chosen ones. You know, it's up to you what you will choose to focus on. But that brings us to our last fill in the blank. Make your choice. Make your choice. Verse 14. Now therefore fear the Lord and serve him in sincerity and in faithfulness. Put away the gods that your fathers served beyond the river and in Egypt, and serve the Lord. And if it is evil in your eyes to serve the Lord, then choose this day whom you will serve, whether the gods your fathers served in the regions beyond the river, or the gods of the Amorites in whose land you dwell. But as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. Kind of sounds like the old song. You gotta serve somebody. It may be the devil, or it may be the Lord, but you gotta serve somebody. And then Joshua declares what his focus will be. As for me and my house, we're going to serve the Lord. That's courage. That's taking a decisive stand. That is staying true to your commitment. It's serving a purpose that is bigger than yourself. It's making your choice, and he even carved it out in stone. Listen to this, Joshua 24, 26. Joshua wrote these words in the book of the law of God, and he took a large stone, and he set it up there under the terebinth that was by the sanctuary of the Lord. And Joshua said to all the people, "Behold, this stone shall be a witness against us, for it has heard all the words of the Lord that he has spoken to us. Therefore it shall be a witness against you, lest you deal falsely with your God." So Joshua sent the people away, every man to his inheritance. And that's how it ends. That was Joshua's story. So what kind of story do you want to tell? Come on up, Glenn. Here's our questions for reflection this week. Like I said before, for our communion time, what I'd like us to do is, after this song, we're going to dismiss, we're going to close the service, and as we set up these tables, I'd like you to be seated around the tables, and let's take communion around our tables, and then we'll share in a meal together. If you're not planning on staying for the meal, if you can at least stay for communion, and then feel free to go if you want. Here's our questions for reflection. How would you describe your relationship with God? Is it more like bargaining, or is it complete surrender? How can we ensure that our obedience to God goes beyond this bargaining and leads to complete surrender? Number two, why is it important to differentiate between an altar and an idol? How can we ensure that our worship is a witness pointing to God rather than a form of rebellion which is driven by fear or insecurity? Remember, the difference between an altar and an idol is your heart, your motives, your attitude. Number three, how does staying focused on Jesus and our purpose help us navigate the distractions and challenges in our Christian walk? What steps can we take? What steps can you take today to hold your course, to move forward, to stay focused on your purpose? Let's stand as we close with this song.